You're listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. I'm your host, Savannah Wright. Before debut, before the Sugar Cubes, Björk was actually a punk rocker. Maybe that surprises you. After all, you don't hear a single guitar on any of her solo records. Or maybe it makes perfect sense. If you remember, one of the things Björk is best known for is when she attacked a reporter who pestered her at the airport. And what's more punk than attacking a reporter? If you look closely at the rest of her career, you realize her punk origins are still with her. Björk makes music on her own terms. At one point, she even started her own record label. She has a DIY attitude when it comes to music production, crafting beats on her laptop from home-recorded sounds. She's the ultimate nonconformist when it comes to her fashion and music. And she's a musical and technological pioneer. She was experimenting with app building and VR before it was cool. So in this episode, we're going to look back at Björk's punk roots. We'll learn about the bands she played with, what those years taught her, and how that punk ethos still resonates, specifically in Medulla. That's right, I finally found a way into that record. Listen to the end to hear my full review. Before we can dive into Björk's history with punk, let's get clear about what punk is exactly, because the term encapsulates a few different things. There's punk music, think The Clash, The Sex Pistols, and Black Flag. There's punk fashion, think ratty t-shirts safety pinned together, leather jackets, plaid pants, and Doc Martens. Punk had a ton of subcultures, so I'm really simplifying here, but you get the idea. And then there's the punk ethos. Punks were big on nonconformity, anti-authoritarianism, and anti-corporatism. The do-it-yourself mentality comes from the punk subculture, as does the fear of quote-unquote selling out. But I think Henry Rollins from Black Flag summarized it best when he said, quote, "Questioning anything and everything, to me, is punk rock," close quote. Punks not only questioned mainstream culture, but they also challenged contemporary counterculture. Punk arose in response to the hippie era of the late 60s and early 70s. They scoffed at the peace, love, and rock and roll idealism in favor of gritty realism. Björk grew up with the movement. By the early 80s, punk music was splitting off into a bunch of subgenres, like post-punk, hardcore, and new wave. I'd argue the bands that Björk was in fell into the new wave category, but really, Iceland had its own take on punk. Here's an example from when she was in the band Kukul. They combined folk music with punk to create something completely different. Icelandic punk also targeted a different authority figure. While punks in the UK raged against Margaret Thatcher, Icelandic punks raged against Denmark, since Iceland used to be a Danish colony. Björk joined the punk scene when she was 13. Her first band was a girl group called Spit and Snot. I'm sorry to say that this band didn't last long, nor did her next handful of groups. So we don't have any recordings from that period. The first recordings we do have come from her time in a post-punk group called Tapi Tikaras. She joined the band when she was 16. Tapi Tikaras was featured in the documentary Rock í Reykjavík about the burgeoning rock scene in Iceland. On the film's promotional poster, you see Björk dancing on stage in a yellow baby doll dress with red rouge on her cheeks. The poster was colorized to look that way. In the actual performance, she's dressed all in white. A white bow in her hair accentuates her baby bangs. But don't be deceived by her girlish appearance. When she opens her mouth, you hear that same powerful belt. These clips show how Björk's voice is perfect for rock. Of course, she can adapt her voice to any genre. We've heard jazz on Glinglo, growls on Homogenic, and whispers on Vespertine. But she's so good in this setting too. If you haven't seen this clip from the documentary, you need to pause what you're doing and click the link in the show notes. Björk is only 16, yet she commands the audience's attention, hopping around the stage and belting into the microphone. Like in the Sugar Cubes, she sings with another male vocalist. But let's be real, she totally steals the show. A year later, Björk went on her first foreign tour with Tapi Tikaras to the UK. Björk didn't speak English at the time, but she did learn F. Margaret Thatcher from another band, Flux of Pink Indians, who used that phrase in the chorus of one of their songs. Björk looks back on that time fondly. Quote, "It was like I went to the moon. Like, my God, things are so exotic here." Close quote. The Tapi Tikaras period slightly overlaps with her next punk band, Kukul. It's Icelandic for black magic or sorcery. This is when Björk joined forces with Einar Örn, who later became her singing partner in the Sugar Cubes. In an interview with Ur in 1995, Björk said that Kukul was actually more important to her than the Sugar Cubes. She said, quote, "The Kukul period taught me a lot of valuable lessons in a quick and violent way. That band really changed me," close quote. Although she didn't elaborate on how Kukul changed her, I found a clue in the Medulla documentary. She mentioned that during her time with Kukul, she focused a lot on voices and found her identity as a singer. Kukul was also more musically complex. They flirted with avant-garde and non-rock influences like jazz. Here's a clip from one of their most memorable performances. It was on an Icelandic TV station. Funny story about this performance, Björk was pregnant with Sindri at the time, and she wore a black crop top that exposed her belly. Plus, she had recently shaved off her eyebrows. Apparently, an elderly lady watching the program had a heart attack and blamed it on Björk's indecent appearance. She actually sued Björk for this, but she lost. Focusing on the music itself, though, you can hear the beginnings of Björk's signature vocalization style, with all of its snarls and shrieks and sheer power. And she said that her time in punk helped her to create that calling card. Quote, "I come from this kind of punk headspace where it's not about the gear, it's about if you want something, you should make it with your voice. The first 10 years of my singing was done in dodgy punk clubs, and the first 2 or 3 years, I sang through a bass amp. The bass amp had 2 plugs, and the bass player went through one, and I went through the other one, because we couldn't afford a PA. That's probably where my shrieks come from, because I was just trying to be heard in the punk club." Close quote. There's another feature from her punk days that remains in her music, her penchant for unusual melodies. Kukul guitarist, and I'm trying to pronounce the Icelandic here, so bear with me, Gulludr Otarsson, said, quote, "There were a lot of strange harmonics. Kukul was the vehicle to really develop this strange music, and I think it's very obvious. Nobody else was able to play a Kukul song. We wanted to demonstrate for people that you don't always have to play 2 chords with always the same melody," close quote. 2 chords with the same melody? That was a hallmark of early punk bands. Maybe you've seen that graphic from an early punk zine that shows 3 guitar chords and then says, "Now form a band." It's pretty accurate. It makes sense that the punk music Bjork was drawn to was more complicated. After all, she was a child prodigy who studied classical piano and flute. But more than the music itself, Bjork said that punk's ethos made a lasting impact on her. I see that in two clear ways. One, punk showed her how to do things on her own terms, instead of pleasing other people. That idea has been a guiding principle from the beginning, even on debut. She said, quote, "I made debut from a completely egoistic point of view. I was only pleasing myself and making a record I would buy. Because if I'd concentrated on other people's tastes and on the question whether other people would appreciate what I did, a sort of compromise album would have emerged." And you can hear something like that right away. An album like that radiates insecurity and doubt. Close quote. And the second way punk impacted her, it fueled her avant-garde spirit. That's what she told Dazed Digital in an interview. Quote, "Maybe it comes from my punk background, this feeling that you are entering a new frontier. I always have to have at least one foot going into some territory that hasn't been mapped out." Close quote. However, one aspect of punk that Bjork shied away from was politics. If you listen from debut through Vespertine, you won't hear overt political messages. Instead, Bjork wrote songs about relationships, nature, philosophy, and technology. In an interview with The Scotsman, she explained, quote, "I would prefer that music was abstract, rather than standing on a podium pointing a finger at what's wrong with the world." Close quote. She maintained that position for nearly 20 years, until 9/11. Bjork was living in Manhattan at the time, and said of the tragedy, quote, "I was as deeply affected as everyone else in the city, but I was then equally shocked by the American reaction, which felt like Nazi Germany or something." Close quote. Although she didn't elaborate on this comparison, I assume she's referring to the Patriot Act, which expanded the US government's authority to surveil its own citizens, and the increase in hate crimes against Muslim Americans. She continued, quote, "I'm an example of someone who always said they would never get involved in politics. But then situations can become too much, so that even someone like me has to stand up and say, wait a minute. It reached a moment when I'd had enough." Close quote. So Bjork finally raised her political voice in 2004 with Medulla. Asking you, how am I going to make it? In an interview with The Observer, she said that the record was her response to stupid American racism and patriotism after 9/11. Through this album, she asks, quote, "What about the human soul? What happened before we got involved in problematic things like civilization and religion and nationhood?" Close quote. You hear this longing for the primitive in Medulla's stripped-down sound. Remember, this was her follow-up to Vespertine, a record known for its lush layers of microbeats, celeste, harp, and voice. Medulla was layers of pure voice, with the occasional bass, synth, or piano mixed in. She told W Magazine, quote, "I wanted the record to be like muscle, blood, flesh. We could be in a cave somewhere, and one person would start singing, and another person would sing a beat, and then the next person sing a melody, and you could just kind of be really happy in your cave. It's quite rootsy." Close quote. What's impressive here is that this concept, a vocal album inspired by the primitive days before instruments, could have so easily become a gimmick. Even Bjork admitted, quote, "Everybody was going, oh, she's making a vocal album. It'll be a horrible Yoko Ono experience. But I wanted to show that a vocal album doesn't have to be for the chosen few. It was just about working with the instrument I know best, my voice." Close quote. Show me forgiveness for Now, if you've been listening to this podcast from the beginning, you'll know that I wasn't a Medulla fan. There were a few songs that turned me off to the record, like the heavy breathing in the opening track. And the Inuit throat singing in Ancestors. But after listening to the entire album, I realized that the only parts I didn't like were from her collaborators. What made this record finally click for me was noticing how pleasurable Bjork's voice is, even when she veers into shrieking territory. Her performance is so dynamic, yet perfectly controlled, because she was focusing on the instrument she knows best. And the more I listened, the more I wondered if Medulla is Bjork's most punk record. I mean, Volta might be the more obvious choice, with songs like Declare Independence.
Declare independence. Don't let them do that to you. Declare independence. Don't let them do that to you.
And you might say Medulla is too musically complex to be punk. Like, you know that choir line in Oceania?
You dance by my side, children sublime.
Bjork originally wrote that line for piano, but it turned out to be physically impossible to play. So she had to enlist a choir instead. And that's a huge departure from the punk conviction that musical ineptitude means musical freedom. Bjork explained why she disagrees with that principle in an interview with Ur. She said, quote, "If you don't have any technique, if you don't know what you're doing with your instrument, then you don't have a lot of freedom. The more knowledge and technique, the more space and freedom." Close quote. In fact, Bjork said that she originally had the idea to do a vocal album when she was a punk teenager, but she didn't know how to at that point.
Well, it takes a long time to be mature enough, you know. I mean, I could never do Medulla 15 years ago or 10 years ago. I didn't have the maturity, both professionally, like in a studio as a producer or an arranger, and also just emotionally. And also how to deal with other people. I think for every person, it takes a long time to fully become what you are.
Complexity aside, there's also an edginess and dissonance in Medulla that recalls her Kukul days, like in Where Is the Line? For a comparison, here's Assassin by Kukul. What's more, the cover of Medulla reflects the grittiness of punk fashion. On it, Bjork wears a mask made of woven strands of hair and a necklace made of black bones that spells out Medulla. She chose the name Medulla, which is Latin for marrow, because it not only denotes the essence of something, but it also evokes the human core of this album. If you think of hair and bones as everyday objects, then you can see a loose tie between this ensemble and the safety pins and razor blades that punks put on their clothes. Above all, though, Medulla was Bjork's most anti-establishment record to date. On it, she rejects nationalism and calls for a return to our primitive roots, when we were all just one people. That certainly appeals to the anarchy side of punk. It's worth noting Björk's punk origins because it not only explains her musical choices, but also her career choices. Medulla was the first time she commented on politics. It's hard to know if she would have gotten involved if she grew up in a different music scene. But in an interview with Icelandic magazine, Björk said that her sense of responsibility is rooted in the punk ethos. Quote, "This is the soil that I grew from, and it was all about not relying on other people, to do things yourself, to take responsibility. As I get older, this feeling of responsibility, which actually grows from the philosophy of punk, only gets stronger. I understand better that you are responsible to bring out in society those things you want to be a part of. If you can't do that, nobody can." Close quote. And that sense of responsibility didn't end with Medulla. It has reappeared throughout each of her subsequent projects. Like when she saw Denmark's mistreatment of Greenland and the Faroe Islands and wrote Declare Independence. Like when she attracted controversy for dedicating a live performance of that song to Kosovo. When she organized Icelanders to protect their highlands from foreign development. And when she created the world's first app album and some of the first VR music videos. She constantly takes us to new territory. So even if her days of playing punk are long gone, Björk is punk at heart. Although she mostly played punk, Björk listened to a wide variety of music growing up. Everything from Stockhausen to Jimi Hendrix. But one of the artists that impacted her the most was British singer-songwriter, producer, Kate Bush. In the next episode, I'll trace the influence of Kate Bush on Björk's music and career. You've been listening to Björk Unraveled, a series that demystifies Björk's music one piece at a time. Björk Unraveled is produced independently by me, Savannah Wright. If you liked this episode, please share it with a friend and write me a review on whatever podcast app you're using. Okay, so I promised I would give my full review of Medulla. I'm still not a fan of The Pleasure Is All Mine or Ancestors. I respect the vocal techniques there, but the sounds just kind of grate on my ears. I like almost every other song though. Hearing Björk sing completely a cappella on Show Me Forgiveness slays me. Fukuro is hauntingly beautiful. Who Is It is probably in my top 5 Björk songs now, especially once I learned that the song is dedicated to her daughter. And my other favorite is Oceania. That song is so enchanting. And hey, let me know your top Medulla songs. You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Björk Unraveled. If you have an idea for a future episode, you can tell me about that too. I'm Savannah Wright. Thanks for listening.